Darcy. Darcy. Darcy!
What?
Wake up. It's time for Finding Me on KPPPLP 88.1 FM
in Fargo, Moorhead.
The wind has come to take me down a notch, a peg or a level or two. The swollen moon has got a sight set on me too. The devil's son gonna take me higher, higher than I ever been before. I told my mama, no, I can't take no more. I can't take no more. Wind has come, take me down to the empty farm where I grew up on the land. Build this childhood and for a boy with my own two hands. I look around them bony trees and sunken cows. There's almost snow. Nobody knows nothing except what me and the crow do know. Who am I? Who am I to fuck with form? Who am I to weather a storm? But I go slow. I said goodbye to everyone I know. And in the morning I woke, and I was this guy named Joe. To the field to dream by the light of the moon. No, there ain't no coming home, no going back, skipping June. I sit by the water down by the freeway. The cotton is high and the corn is high. Don't know what I'm gonna do with myself tonight. Who am I to change my name? Some things will always stay the same. There really ain't no one to blame. Can't expect nobody to live in that pain. And I know you miss me so. I said goodbye to everyone I know. And one morning I this guy named Joe. Rock and roll is music. 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 Rock and roll is music.
Welcome back to another week of Finding Me here on the only station adding local queer color to your airwaves. You are tuned in to KPPPLP 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, either on your radio dial, on Shoutcast, or on our website kpppfm.com. I'm Darcy Jada Corbett.
And I am Nemo Cicados, and tonight we are continuing our discussion of transgender voices. A couple of weeks ago we had the opportunity to sit down with two lovely trans women here in the Fargo Moorhead area. This week we will be talking to Jay Vogt, a handsome trans man from the Valley, who is going to share his journeys with us and talk about resources available to trans men. Today's music is written and performed by male transgender artists.
So I'm really excited about this show, Nemo, because I, as a trans person, like being able to give trans people a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much giving them a voice, but giving them a place for them to use their voice.
Sure.
Because we are often just kind of pushed away and told to be quiet. And if you try to air your grievances, people don't want to listen to it. And so that's one of the things I love about having this show, is being able to have the opportunity to use my voice, but also to give other people a forum to use their voice. And I like all the things that we have coming up today. We've got these great video clips from YouTube. We're listening to different trans men share what it's like to be a trans man. Mm-hmm. And later in the show, we're going to have a trans man from the area come on and talk about his journey, and we're going to discuss some different things. And I think it's so, it just makes me so happy to hear trans voices talking about trans issues. Mm-hmm. Because I think that the most of the people who are talking about trans issues in the media are people who aren't trans, and
oh yeah,
their voices are not pretty.
Right. And quite frankly, our community is largely dominated by the GL parts of our community, while our bi brothers and sisters and non-binary folks are otherwise erased or silenced, just like we are. Mm-hmm. And we can't let that happen. So here they're going to have a place to have, you know, speak about those issues.
Well, I don't know if anyone's noticed, but most of our shows to this point have focused largely on those plus parts of the acronym, mm-hmm. or on the second half of the acronym, mm-hmm. because it's so important that we give voice to people who were ignored. If you look at the census the unofficial census that are taken, is that the correct? I don't know.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Let's go with it.
Let's go with it. When you look at like the statistics that are captured on LGBTQ identity, they always show there are more gay and lesbian folk than there are anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I'm skeptical of this. I think that the reason there's more is because they have a voice, mm-hmm. or their voice is allowed to speak. And yeah. So that's why I think it's so important that we have a place for trans voices to speak. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm so excited about this show. I've been looking forward to it since we decided to do the second part, because we had, you know, the first part was our second show, I think, actually. So there was sort of a gap, but I was really looking forward to this. So, mm-hmm. but I'm really excited.
And I just want to start by saying that, quite honestly, I don't really remember or know that many transgender male role models, because as I grew up, you know, being autistic, I found that autistic born women already have a more skewed concept of gender conformity and identity. And so right from the get-go, even before I was born, my grandfather had bought some clothes at a garage sale for really cheap, like a whole closet of them, both male and female traditional clothing. And so my mom was just like, why did you buy all these clothes? And, you know, when we don't know the sex of the baby, it's like, doesn't matter. They were like 10 cents, you know, for this whole deal. And so I have a lot of pictures of me in both really well-made dresses and cute overalls. And then, like, I remember one day I was helping my mom make her bed. She started laughing. I was like, Mom, why are you laughing? Because it's like, oh, I just thought of something. It's kind of mean, actually. And I'm like, well, no, tell me. What is it? I can take it. And it's like, okay, well, when you were first born, I always thought you were kind of an ugly girl, but you make a much better boy. And I'm like, well, I'm glad it all worked out in the end.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks for letting me know how you really feel about me.
Right? So I don't really have that many transgender male role models, but I do think about general male figures in my life nonetheless, especially the ones that do not conform to the ideas of traditional toxic masculinity.
Like Justin Trudeau, the very sexy Prime Minister of Canada. Mm-hmm. One of those men who I think transcends this idea of what it means to be a man and a male leader. That's what's so incredible, is like he's a leader too. It's mm-hmm. not just like he's some on the fringe.
Right. And a few months back, I saw a video about, he got a question about, it was a scientific subject, and people were asking this question, not really expecting him to understand or answer it, but then he just went off, because he loves this particular subject of science. And so he just went off explaining and, you know, his ideas about the question at hand, and people are just amazed. And I'm just like, you know, I kind of appreciate how well-rounded he is, both knowledgeably and socially.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of getting back to trans male role models, like I'm currently on the internet looking at lists of trans role models, and they mm-hmm. are disproportionately leaning towards the MTF trans mm-hmm. folk. So I think part of that problem is they're just
not as visible.
They're not as visible.
I mean, like,
they're out there. They have to be. It's not like they don't exist. It's just they're not as visible.
Exactly. I mean, I love my, you know, Laverne Cox from, mm-hmm. you know, Orange is the New Black. I love her. I definitely know I don't like Caitlyn Jenner, quite frankly. And so, but
nor do I.
Right. And so, like, you know, I know what I'd like to see in trans role models in general, because I mostly see trans women and I think that's great, but I just don't see myself reflected. But I do know what I don't want to see.
Yeah, and you know, I think part of it, my personal opinion, and we're going to talk about masculinity later, so I don't want to like talk about it too much now, but I think part of the problem is women are so much more accepting than men are.
Of course.
And so I think women are much more ready to accept trans women than men are to accept trans men.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that could potentially be a reason why there aren't so many transgender role models. But I mean, we do have some pretty awesome ones, like Chaz Bono is just a really awesome person.
Right.
An inspiration to me even before I came out as transgender. And then I didn't even know he was transgender, but Buck Angel is an award-winning porn performer. Ooh. And owns a porn company that specializes in affirming transgender porn.
Wow.
And which is, I mean, wow is exactly right, because yeah, most trans porn is not affirming at all.
Right, it's fetishy.
It's fetishy, it's...
It's gross.
it is gross, and in many different levels, but I've actually watched some of his stuff because I wanted to see, okay, what exactly... I don't know, people are like, yeah, Darcy, you wanted to see, it was an academic experience for you. Think what you will, but
no, seriously, well,
don't think too much about it.
No, seriously, it's important to, like, you know, examine porn, especially for trans folk, because as it is, the platform is already racist and degrading to women, and it should be more inclusive to women and trans men, instead of making it fetishy, like, ooh, look, it's insert derogatory term to describe the film, you know? Mm-hmm.
And the reason I had looked it up is I was trying to decide if I was going to include him on a list of inspirational trans people. And I decided, yes, I didn't feel uncomfortable doing so. But moving away from porn and what I watch on the internet. that would be a really fun show, wouldn't it?
Maybe.
The FCC might have something to say about it. But another person who I think is really inspiring is Kai Allams, who's the first transgender NCAA Division I college athlete. Mm-hmm. I remember when he came out, that was a really big deal. Yeah, and I'm just slipping through. Yep, nope, mm-hmm. That was it. So it's, you know, it's funny, but it's not funny, because we really do need role models. And for me, one of the hardest parts about being transgender is not having many older role models in my community.
Yeah.
So, or having publicly visible ones. So, for example, there are tons of people that I can look to as a role model that are my age or younger than me or like a few years older, but there's no one who's older. So I don't really have anything to base like my perception of what my older life is going to look like.
Right.
And that is so important for people to kind of have someone to look to as, this is what I want to be when I get older. Mm. And for me, like you said, a lot of the people that I look to as my older role models are people who are cisgender. Mm-hmm. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But at the same time, as a trans person, I am concerned about, will I be able to work?
Yeah.
Will I be able to retire?
Yeah. And
even, will I have kids?
And then, like, you know, I even tried going as far as looking into my own culture. And there are third gender identities and trans identities in Mexico from where my ancestors come from on this continent. And I see a lot of people who might be interpreted as trans women, but I don't see the same for trans men. And I'm pretty sure they exist if we see people that identify with the feminine identity.
Mm-hmm. And even though we don't have a great number of role models, in the last decade, we have seen this idea change, though, where we have more and more transgender folk prominently and courageously living their lives and defining their own identity. And one such rising transgender role model is Laith Ashley De La Cruz.
You can find a link to this video at tinyurl.com/fm-LaithAshley2016. That is LaithAshley 2016. Role models aren't just celebrities. They are ordinary people just boldly living their lives and working little by little to find themselves in a world which is not designed to make gender transition easy. One such ordinary person is UK YouTube vlogger Jamie Rains. You can find a link to this video at tinyurl.com/fm-JamieRains2016. JAIMERAINES 2016. He grew into such a nice young man.
I know. Every time I watch that clip about Jamie, I get so teary-eyed, because it's so, like, just watching someone become the person that they've always been.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good.
It's really sweet.
And then Laith. Oh, Lord. You should Google him. You ought.
I ought.
You ought. It is imperative. He looks...
divine.
Divine. Like everything that I want in life. And what I like so much about these two men is that they're so self-aware, mm-hmm. which is something that a lot of men aren't. Mm-hmm. Because men are not taught to think about how they feel, to express their emotions, to embrace their emotions. And these men have. Mm-hmm. And it was essential for them to do that, because without having embraced who they are, they wouldn't be in the place where they're able to live a life that affirms their identity. And I think that that's so important. And I think that having that role model is important, because it gives you a starting place. You know where to go. And Jamie basically walked us through what his transition was like. And that is so helpful, to be able to mm-hmm. have sort of a very brief guide. And, you know, it's important to note that no two transitions are alike 100%. Right. There's some similarities, but it is helpful to kind of know where to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like for me, I was making a lot of like mental decisions that I want to do in my future. My mom let me think about, listen, do you want to have children? And I said, yeah, I do want to have children. And something that's really nice to find out is that it's never too late to transition. I did feel like kind of unlucky that I missed out on the concept of being able to take puberty blockers until I could confirm my gender identity later in life before puberty hit the way it did. But I'm glad for those it's an opportunity to have that. But I did some research about what testosterone does to the body, and I found that it would probably be far more beneficial to me if I wanted to have kids that I wait to do it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Although I did read about a story that my mom shared with me about a trans man who had a child because his wife couldn't do it. And I thought this was beautiful, amazing. And it talked about his whole process from his sister's point of view of what he had to do in order to, you know, have that child. He had to be off testosterone to make sure that everything went smoothly. And he had to talk to his bosses and supervisors of what was going to happen to him. Because on paperwork, he was a man and everything, but he just wanted to, he had to, like, you know, come out to them like, okay, listen, I'm transgender and I'm going to have a baby. And if you could just work with me here, that'd be great. And I believe it was a supervisor like, oh, okay, well, sure, you know, whatever you need help with, let us know and we'll be there for you and make sure to accommodate as best we can for your work schedule, etc. And then he had the baby. He was really happy. And they have this thing among trans men who have children, chest feeding instead of breastfeeding. And it's like, makes sense. Okay. So, you know, that's going to be an exciting prospect for me if I have a partner or there's artificial insemination involved or who knows what. But I don't feel as bad as I did before about not having that chance, because I've heard many stories of transgender folks who choose to transition with hormones much later in life, and then everything's okay. You know, it's not going to be the end of the world if you don't start right after, you know, you're free from the house.
Yeah, and I also just recently read a story about a trans couple, so a trans man and a trans woman, mm-hmm. and they both had a baby together in Ecuador. And
nice.
She's a prominent advocate down there, and they just shared just pictures, and they just both look so happy. Okay, I'm about to start crying again. And it was just so sweet that they both wanted a family, and they wanted to have it together, mm-hmm. and their bodies were not a barrier for them. We're going to talk the next half hour about masculinity. And yeah. I think that that's just really an important thing to think about when you think about masculinity and femininity. What does it mean to be either one? And I know there are some people who would say, well, I mean, they're going against what it means to be masculine or feminine. And I would disagree completely, mm-hmm. that they're just being human beings. They're using the body that they have to get what they want.
Yeah.
And
it's a magical thing, really.
And it, you say a magical?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a magical thing. And in my relationships, I've always had that same perspective. It's like, do I like the body that I have? No, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. It's not the one that I want. But it is my body. And I'm going to, while I have it, while it is the way that it is, I'm going to validate it and its experiences. Because to invalidate my body is the very thing that I'm fighting against. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think I agree with you completely on that, and I'm looking forward to talking more about masculinity in the next half hour.
Yes.
If you're thinking about transitioning or need help with your transition, visit my website at Darcy Corbett, darcycorbitt.org/help for resources. When we come back on Finding Me, we'll be talking to Jay Vogt, a local transgender role model, about his journey and the resources available to trans men in the Fargo-Moorhood area. Before we do that, we'd like to take a pause to talk about masculinity and what that means for and to trans men.
Now, as a trans man myself, I choose, as I earlier mentioned in the earlier half hour of the show, that I'm not going to be on hormones until after I've achieved my dream of having my own kids. And that I do not ascribe to the concept of toxic masculinity. And to explain that concept, I'm going to play this clip explained by Dylan Marin, one of my favorite queer Latino actors, with his unboxing series.
From the makers of Rape Culture, Unjust Wars, and Everything Bad, I'm unboxing masculinity. Friends, you know the drill. Each week, I unbox the sickest abstract concepts, and this week, I'm unboxing a product that literally rules the world. Now, I was always made fun of for not having this as a kid, so I'm so excited that I finally got my hands on it to see what all the fuss is about. There's a warning label. Yes! So before anything else, you'll see a pair of velvet gloves. Now, this comes standard, and this product may seem really durable and strong, but it's actually incredibly fragile. So when you're handling it, just make sure to treat it like delicate porcelain without ever making it feel that way. Oh, thank God. It is a gas mask and a protective suit. You can't always see the toxins. Sometimes they're in the form of harassment, sometimes it's violence, and sometimes it's just a constant stream of quotes from the movie Wedding Crashers that were never actually funny to begin with. But either way, always be prepared. Heck yeah! It's a ruler. Use it to measure random body parts to senselessly determine virtue and power. And don't worry, it always rounds up, helping you see the number you want, not the one that's real. Cool, 8.5 inches. All right, I don't totally get it, but it's a picture of two men kissing. Kind of weird. Oh, I know what it is. So this must be one of those older models that has that infamous glitch, which processes unknown images as fear and aggression. This is really interesting. It just says a conversation replacement. Oh, it's a red solo cup and a ping pong ball. Okay. No way! A freaking guide of helpful tricks. Okay, so you know those cheat guides for video games? Think of this the same exact way. Watch this. Feminism. Rape culture. Maybe you could consider the consequences of your privilege and the subtle ways in which your blindness has supported patriarchal oppression. Whoa! So cool! All right, that's it for me. As you can see, this product self-destructs, so I'm glad I never bought into the hype. Bye!
So listeners, I really highly recommend that you check out that clip. It really helps to actually see the visuals of what he's describing, especially with the box moving around with around images of, you know, that I can't comprehend by fear and aggression, etc., and the exploding. It is just hilarious. So
yeah, you couldn't hear us because we were muted, but we were laughing our heads off at especially the ruler. Like, yes, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think it's so funny though that he started out with the velvet gloves, because toxic masculinity is incredibly fragile. I mean, we see it all the time. Trans woman comes out.
Right.
Or like, I see it when I'm trying to date people and I tell them, yeah, I'm interested in you. And they're like, yeah, you're hot. And I'm like, yeah, I was born a man. And they're like, it's like they blow, they can't deal, because suddenly their identity as a man has been negated because they were attracted to someone that they perceive to be male. And so, and then just.
Yeah. And then, of course, like, you know, right from the get-go, it is hilarious because Dylan Marin, like, you know, mentions the warning label, but he doesn't say what it is. But on the label, I can tell you, listeners, it says, no homo.
No homo. Do people still say that?
I guess.
I hope they don't. But
probably. I mean, if you still hear some of the nonsense Trump supporters say, it's probably still consistent.
When I was in elementary school, this is a great example of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. Going to the bathroom, I feel like my conversations always go back to the bathroom for some reason. Or they're in the toilet or the gutter. It all has to do with 21 years of not being able to say what I want to say. And so now it's just like this word vomit of inappropriate things a lot of the time. But when I was in elementary school, when I would go to the bathroom, there'd be like guys in there, "Ew, don't use the gay toilet." And the gay toilet changed every time. And I'm like, I didn't realize porcelain had a sexual orientation. But apparently it does. And apparently it also has a gender identity. And so it's sort of when I think of the transgender bathroom, you know, BS that trans people have to wade through on an hourly basis, what goes through my mind, and this is how I'm able to just kind of keep my cool in the midst of it, is I think of those people from elementary school saying, "Oh, it's the gay toilet." It's sort of like the adult version of that, this whole idea of bathrooms having a gender. So, but yes, I think it's important that we think about how masculinity, how our view, our perception of masculinity, how our perception of femininity too.
Oh, yeah.
Because toxic masculinity also defines the way we look at femininity as well. Mm-hmm. How that has been so harmful, not just to women, but to men. And that's the whole point, I think, that Dylan was trying to make, is that this is harmful to men because it takes away your identity and creates in you this cocktail of really terrible reactions, frailty, aggression, hatred, violence. He starts by talking about the maker, you know, from the makers of war and
rape culture.
Toxic masculinity is responsible for all of these problems.
And
that
it
we
rules
have.
The world.
It does. And just watching this presidential campaign, you can see just how much toxic masculinity does control the world. We have a female presidential candidate for the first time ever in a major political party actually has a chance at being the president of the United States. The most qualified person we've ever had running for office, but she's a woman. And so she's criticized for everything she does. She has pneumonia, goes to a public event, and then we speculate on her suitability for public office.
I read a really good argument about
toxic
that.
Masculinity.
Right. And then like also on, you know, I don't like Hillary Clinton more than, you know, any more than the next person. I have my own gripes about her past. But something that interesting that I saw in an article was about this study done in relation to Hillary Clinton's popularity and how she was really popular when she was at her current job, but then her popularity would drop when she was looking for another. And the punchline of it was, as long as a woman isn't looking for a promotion, then she's fine, you know?
As long as a woman knows her place,
right,
and keeps her mouth shut and does a good job, we don't care.
Exactly.
The minute she starts to question anything... Shut up. Like, that is toxic masculinity. That is the male frailty component of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And the reason that toxic masculinity is such, it's important for us to bring up in this discussion of trans male identity is because it informs trans male transitions.
Mm-hmm.
Because trans men are conditioned to live a certain way. And then when they start living as men, suddenly toxic masculinity becomes, it hurts them in a completely different way. It comes out.
Right. Because then it's like, am I ever going to be man enough? That
right.
sort of thing. Or am I ever going to be woman enough?
You know, on the other side, if you're, you know, female to male, am I ever going to be pretty enough? Am I going to be skinny enough? Am I going to be built enough? Am I going to... And then this is something that really irritates me is when people talk about, well, he's hot for a trans man, but, you know, he probably has a vagina, so whatever. And it's like... but no, that doesn't make him any less of a man. Body parts do not make you man or woman. They just make you, they just define what your reproductive role is. That's it. That is the only thing that body parts do. I don't know if anyone knows this, but we all start out as female.
Right.
And then depending on... You know, the chromosomes we get from our parents, then the clitoris becomes the penis. Like,
the concept,
we all start out with a vagina, basically.
Right, right. The concept of sex, as genitals go, is not totally hand-in-hand with the concept of gender. And the thing is, quite honestly, with my mom surrounded by four brothers and then a sister, she probably has the biggest balls in the family.
When you grow up with, you know, a majority of a different gender in your house, you do kind of have to learn how to work within that system. And we'll definitely be talking more as the evening progresses about working within a different system, you know, working within, as a person who was raised female or as a person who was raised male, working in the opposite, living in the opposite space. And in the studio tonight, we have a local trans leader, Jay Vogt, who is involved in the FM Brotherhood, an organization whose mission it is to support trans men in the Red River Valley. I've had the pleasure of protesting with Jay and supporting and being supported by Jay since moving to the area. Jay, we're happy to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
So as we get started, the theme of today's show is really talking about trans man identity. And we spent the first half of the show talking about how hard it is to be transgender, not just because of the social stigma and because of the legality issues, but because we don't really have any role models, or we don't have role models who are older. All of our role models are our own age, and it's kind of hard because it's like we're all figuring out together what we're doing. And we'd really like to hear from you as, you know, who are your role models, and also just a little bit about your own specific journey and how things that you've learned, what the easy parts have been, what the hard parts have been, just so that we can give you an opportunity to be a role model to so many people who are listening tonight who may be struggling with finding out what their identity is, struggling in their own individual journeys towards becoming a better version of them.
Role models, I don't know. I don't really have anybody specific, but anybody who seemed to be happy with themselves and accepting of themselves, even if it was cisgendered person. Yeah, I don't know. Anybody who can just live and, be accepting. And it's kind of funny because what came to mind for role models was the group Hanson. I really, when I was younger, I really looked up to them, and my mom would always say, "They look like girls. Why do you look up to them so much?" But it's because I identified with them in some way. I was a long hair. I had long blonde hair, and I felt like I was them in a way. That's really the only people I can think of.
I can't imagine you with long blonde hair because you have such short blonde hair now. But
oh yeah, I was a little hippie.
I'm sure it was really pretty. Because you have really pretty hair now.
Yeah.
So, awkward moment on finding Amy. Yeah. Darcy sort of hits on the guest. Oh my God, I'm actually blushing. I don't blush very easily. Fanning myself right now.
I must be seeping through the phone.
what have some of the easy parts of your journey been? I think a lot of times when we think about transgender identity and transitioning, that we kind of think, oh, it's going to be hard. And it definitely is very hard. But I think there are some parts, at least in my own experience, that have been pretty easy. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I guess easy for me, the only thing I can really think of is when I look at myself in the mirror and I see myself more every single day that passes. And that's really been the most, rewarding part of accepting who I am. I guess another easy factor would just be I get to walk around my whole day, even going to bed at night, as myself. And that's always been a hard thing for me, is just being myself. And now I can do that. So, yeah.
So how did you get to that place where you were able to just be yourself and be able to look at yourself and like what you see? Like what was your process for that, if you don't mind sharing?
It's kind of been a weird one. I started transitioning 2012, and I attempted transitioning twice since then. The last time I was on testosterone for a year and a half after being on it for about 2 years. And I just, at that time I had found my way in the recovery scene and got sober and went through a bad breakup and just had to start all over again. And in that process, I realized that the testosterone wasn't to blame. Transitioning wasn't the problem. It was all these things I needed to figure out. And this time around has just been absolutely amazing. And the strength I have, knowing I'm capable of loving myself, it just changes the whole game.
Yeah, and I definitely, I can identify with that story because I think a lot of times there's this misconception about what transitioning is about and how your transition, you don't become the person that you are until you've transitioned, which I don't agree with at all. I think that we are that person from day one. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of getting to be a better version of that person.
Right.
And but I think what a lot of people don't think about is trans people are people too.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we have our own monsters that we have to deal with, On my end, I struggle with chronic depression and binge eating disorder. So, that's something that I've had to work on while transitioning physically, socially, emotionally, to being a better version of me. And so, I like that you incorporated that into sort of what part of your journey has been, is you have so many other things that you have to deal with on top of the fact that your physical appearance doesn't match what you feel like on the inside. Right. And then you have all this, all this other stuff being thrown at you about you have to use a specific bathroom, you can't change your gender marker on your driver's license without going through a bunch of hoops to get the testosterone or the estrogen that you frankly need to feel more whole. I mean, that whole process in and of itself is expensive, intrusive, and frustrating. And so That's already hard, but then you have to throw in the fact that we have other things that we have to deal with too that aren't even related. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, frankly, they are related to our gender identity, the fact that we've been oppressed our whole lives. I mean, I attribute all of my psychological issues to that specific thing, but they're not directly related to this process of becoming who I want to be. So, and who I am. Well, not just who I want to be, but who I am. And I want to be who I am. So I definitely, like, I can identify with that. And I think that part of loving yourself is so essential to the journey, because I know there are a lot of people who try to transition without really getting to that place where they can look at themselves in the mirror where they are currently and say, yeah, I don't particularly like what I see, but I love what I see. And that's definitely where I am on a daily basis. I don't like the way that I look, but I love who I am and I love me. And that is what keeps me going in the transition. And I think it's hard to get to that place because our whole life we've been told you are not worthy. You are not the person that you want to be. You're not the person who you are. And you shouldn't really love who you are. You should try to be someone else. And so, like, overcoming that is so hard. So I really like that you also just brought up this idea that you have to love yourself. And sort of along that line, if you could give Baby Jay one piece of advice, what would that be?
Oh gosh. I see myself in a way smiling at myself, even in my most miserable rock bottom moments where I think that another minute is going to be the most horrible minute that I'm going to live yet if I keep living. And just like, you're going to be okay. You already know that life is going to be okay. And with my struggling with addiction, that was part of trying to pretend to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. And it was odd because in the middle of using, I was still able to be my masculine self, but I could blame it on something else. And I didn't have to take ownership of who I was deep down inside. And I don't know, like, even the fighting with my father, that was partly reflective of I didn't feel like he saw me the way I saw him, or like how I felt like he should have saw me, like as his son, not doing the dishes like he told me was what women are supposed to do. And like, no, I want a hatchet. I'm going to come to the woods with you if that's what you think men are supposed to do. I know it's very stereotypical, but that's my dad. But so just that I'm going to be okay. I don't really have direct advice. Just, I guess trust myself so I can believe in myself.
I think that's great advice, though. And just hanging on, like, if I look back, so I started transitioning socially in 2010. Because I started coming out in 2010. Mm-hmm. So it's been 5 years. And when I look back on that time, I was so afraid that I would not be able to have the life that I have. I didn't think I could withstand all of the stuff that I've been through, and I've been through some pretty bad stuff, let me tell you. And I look back 5 years later, and one, I think it's probably, I feel like it's been 10 years since that happened, because it was so awful. I mean, all these really terrible things happened to me back to back to back in a 6-month period. And I look back and I'm like, I don't know how I was able to survive that. And I think that advice that you gave yourself is the same advice I would tell 18-year-old David Hall. Look, sweetie, It seems like it's going to, like, really be terrible. And guess what? It probably is. But you are strong enough to handle it. And that's advice that I give people all the time, every day of my life, is we're much stronger than we think we are. If we just believe that we can survive, we will. And so, yeah, and I like that you bring up, because we talked right before you came on, we talked about masculinity and how for trans men, that's such a hard... Well, for trans people in general, the idea of masculinity and femininity is frustrating, right? Because I know from, and I can't speak to the trans male experience because I'm not. I have no idea what it's like, but I can speak to being a trans woman and having grown up with male privilege.
Yeah.
And I feel like I approach the world somewhat from the perspective of a person who has been raised as a man, because that's how I was conditioned for 18 years. Uh-huh. So I kind of go into a situation feeling like I deserve male privilege because I used to have it. And I literally went from being respected to being not respected. I went from being assertive to being aggressive. I went from being successful to being a cold B, asterisk, T, C. Like, these are the ways that people see me. I went from being a person with good ideas to a person with a big personality. I literally have not changed one bit from the day that I like came out until today. I have the same personality. I approach things from the same perspective. But the way that I'm treated has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how frustrating it was when I first came out as a gay man because that's who I thought I was. And then I came out as a trans woman. And even affirming people who affirmed me as a gay man and looked up to me as a gay man started questioning me like the minute I came out as a trans woman. It's like we have this subtle undercurrent in our brain that's like, woman stupid. Woman can't do anything right. And so...
it messes people up.
It does. And what's so funny is I look at men and I know exactly what they're doing. I know exactly what they're saying, like what's going through their mind. Cause I was there. I used to live in that space.
You know the game.
I know the game. And that's why men are so scared of me because I can take them down. Cause I know exactly what's going through their head. So I wonder, this is not about me, but I say all this to sort of lead into what I'm going to ask you. And that is, how has it been for you trying to navigate this new space, because you were conditioned as a woman. I don't know how old you were when you started coming out, but I know for me, I lived 85% of my life as a man. So I imagine that the proportion of time that you spent as quote unquote a woman had a profound effect on the way that you kind of see the world. And then you're suddenly thrust into this new space where you have to think about things differently, or people expect you to think about things differently. You're suddenly having to deal with like the world of quote unquote masculinity. What has that been like? What has been the challenge of navigating that? Or has it not been challenging? Maybe it hasn't been. Maybe I'm just unique.
Well, you know, upon transitioning comes a new found puberty.
Oh, so God, it's the worst.
There's the whole mood swings with that. But that's one reason why I actually detransitioned in the first place and kind of took my problems and said it's because of the testosterone. It's because I now have male privilege. But it's because also that I was never taught how I need to behave with politeness and whatever else once I have that privilege, because all of a sudden, boom, you have it. Mm-hmm. You have male privilege. And I kind of became somebody who I didn't want to become, somebody who I was very upset with growing up as a strong feminist from my early age, because I was so disturbed by the male ego and the male privilege. And I just kind of molded into that and I didn't know how to control it. So I thought stopping T would help me control it. Actually, the first time I stopped testosterone, I couldn't get my dosage for about a month. And in that time period, a bunch of estrogen came back and I was listening to music and I started crying. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't cried to a song in a year and a half. Like, what is this? It's so beautiful. And I didn't want to get back on tea after that. But it's crazy because this time around, I can't really go into recovery too much because I can't promote it. But what I've learned in recovery and my socializing with people, that was the other thing. I never socialized with anybody. So I didn't really learn good behaviors. And I don't know, this time around, it's just, I knew I was going to be okay. And I knew I would treat people with respect. And I knew that it was okay to be more assertive. And it was okay to have more confidence and say no more often. And if somebody calls me a jerk because of it, as long as it's a healthy move on my part, it's okay. And that was, I couldn't level those off. And at the same time, I like to lift weights, but I also like to read and I like to play music. And I'm finding this balance of keeping in touch with the parts of myself that I loved so much as a woman, I guess I could say it like that. So, yeah.
I'm chuckling about you, about your references to, you know, hormone changes. Because I just started estrogen back in May. I chose to fully socially transition before medically transitioning because I'm the kind of person I'm very slow to change. And so I have to kind of get accustomed to different stages before I can move on. And I am literally the class that I TA at NDSU is the same class every year. And it's lifespan development. So we talk about everything from like conception to death. And I'm sitting in this class and co-teaching this class with estrogen now. And I find myself crying at weird spots in, like, the class. It's like, baby's born. I'm like, oh, it's so pretty. Whereas before, I didn't, like, I wasn't inclined. I cry so much more than I used to. And it's really thrown me for a loop, to be honest. Like, people will kind of chew me out, which happens to me very often. And I kind of
just
like
because
am
now
taken
you've
aback.
Like yeah, I mean like because you just now unlocked your capacity for emotion.
Well, and like it's weird because I have to like take pauses. I'm like I'm gonna walk away from this situation because I'm about to cry. It's bizarre. It has been one of the weirdest things that has ever happened to me. And I've heard that the other, you know, the reverse, that testosterone is a lot harder to adjust to because it's such an aggressive hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember going through puberty, and I can sympathize with you because I remember exactly what that felt like. And you smell bad, you've got hair in places that shouldn't be hair, and you're just like, dude, like, chill out. And you want to eat all the time. That's the other thing I remember, is just wanting to eat. And that's why I got so fat, because I just never stopped. But, yeah, so that... I think that's another part that of the transition process we don't think about is that you are going through puberty, and it's okay when you're 13, but when you're 24 years old and you're supposed to have a job and you're supposed to be like nice to people, it's hard going through puberty because your inclination is to be rude and to just like sit in a ball until your levels level out. But like, you can't do that. You have to kind of focus. And I remember when I started wearing makeup for the first time back in 2012, looking like a clown most of the time, because that's what you do when you learn how to wear makeup. Well, okay, as a 12 or 13 year old girl, that's cute. As a 19, 20 year old woman, it's not cute at all. So it's like we have to kind of create these safe spaces for ourselves, and we have to grow up really fast. And anyway, that's been fun, and that is a perfect like segue into my next question, which is, tell me about the Brotherhood and tell me about the support that exists for trans men here in the Red River Valley.
The Brotherhood was made a couple years ago. It was an attempt to make a different group during that time, I think a couple months before, but it excluded anybody over 30 and under 20 years old. So as a trans guy, I know those groups were being made, or that group was trying to be made by non-transgender people. So I just kind of wanted to, I don't know, try it out. And I got in contact with a couple trans guys and I said, look, this is my idea. What do you guys think? Is this okay? That was back when I was very, I didn't want to ever be like, this is what I'm going to do. I was always like, is this okay? Are you, that's how I lived my life for many years. But yeah, they were like, this is great. Let's do it. And it started with a Facebook page and 5 people, 10. Now there's about 30 people in the group. And the Facebook group is more active. It's private. You can't find it unless you ask to be added on the public page, FTM Brotherhood page, but it's pretty active. The secret group is every day there's somebody asking a question on there. And then there's the support group where we meet at the Pride Collective third Sunday of the month for an hour. We just kind of go there and whoever shows up and we sit around and bond and talk. And yeah, but so far not very many people go to that because I don't know if it's a social thing. It's kind of funny because the other thing for trans guys also is the Tri-State Transgender group that's been around for many years. I mean, when we were talking to a couple of the M2S about the Brotherhood and how nobody shows up, they laughed and said, that's so funny because Tri-State Transgender is completely opposite. You know, the M2S, you know, mainly are the ones who show up there and they love it and they socialize and they talk. And I'm like, that is so crazy because we all grew up very opposite and it's just very interesting. But yeah, that's about the only two groups I can think of. I know that there's groups at MSUM and NDSU, and there's also discussion groups that happen at the Pride Collective, I believe every Sunday, that are trans inclusive.
Yeah, and I've actually been really surprised by how many trans people live in this area, and I don't know what that says about me. Well, and I'm a trans advocate, so you think I wouldn't be surprised, but I know back when I lived in Alabama, people just weren't out.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you were a trans person, people wouldn't come out to you.
Right.
Whereas I feel like here, people are generally feel pretty comfortable being out. You know, in comparison, maybe not if you live in North Dakota, maybe you wouldn't feel that way. But for me, coming here from outside of this culture, I feel like people are much more willing to be out. And I think largely that has to do with the fact that we have these supports like the Brotherhood, like Tri-State Transgender, that provide a safe place for people to really start that social transition. And I think the hardest part of transition, the hardest part of that journey, is being able to just admit it to yourself that yes, I'm transgender. This is what my life is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, admitting it to yourself. Once you've admitted it to yourself, once you've admitted it to your closest friends and you have that support system, then you kind of don't care anymore about anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, you do still care. It still hurts your feelings when somebody misgendered. I got misgendered last night.
Oh.
At at a place where I didn't think I was going to get misgendered. And it always, it never ceases to amaze me because I have these huge breasts. And so I'm like,
yeah,
this is the second time this week I've referenced my breasts on air. But it always surprises me because it's like, I don't feel like I look like a man, but I do kind of sound more masculine because my voice is low. I mean, testosterone did it. It's not, can't be fixed. It's what it is.
I think you have a beautiful voice, Darcy.
Well, thank you. I think I do too. But, you know, having the support, being able to come, you know, to my support group and say, yeah, they got misgendered, and they're just like, what the F, man? And I use man as a gender neutral. That's such a male privilege thing. That's a whole other show. Yeah. But having that support really gives me the confidence to just say, okay, that happened. I can radically accept it and mm-hmm. move on. And on this idea of being out, I was going to ask you about where it is for you at work. And then I'm sitting here on Facebook, as I do. And just last week, there's a story about this Canadian transgender teenager who was worried about coming out to his football team about being trans. And he did, and the team was really supportive. It was great. We all had this great kumbaya moment. And then I see on Mike this story. This transgender teen was allegedly fired from McDonald's after getting media attention. And it's this kid from Halifax, Canada. And I'm like,
oh,
this poor kid. So this is like the opening line. This injustice is supersized. Only about 2 weeks ago, Kenny Cooley, a transgender teen and high school football player in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, received international media attention for being an out transgender football player on the Halifax West High School. Now, Metro reports he says he has encountered backlash after his moment in the spotlight, and he has been fired from his job at McDonald's. And the owner the operator of the McDonald's where he works said, well, no, it's not true. That's not why we did it. But
then what was the reason?
But the timing is not great.
No.
The timing is not great.
It would be understandable if they had a legitimate reason. Because I've worked in food service, and I've worked with a lot of people who I thought should have been fired. We're not going to even go there.
I can't, on so many levels, I can't even begin to, like, analyze this. And we talked about this on the other show that I'm helping with, Breaking the Silence. We talk about how when minorities bring up issues about, you know, being victimized or about being mistreated, the first thing that everyone does is, like, try to discount what they're saying. And that's just what this reminds me of, is this kid was very brave. He was brave for coming out to his football team. I don't know that I would be that brave. Be like, I don't think I'd do that. He was brave for that. Then he was brave because he allowed ABC to profile him. ABC, that's a big news media. It's not like I was profiled when I first introduced into the media. It was on a small newspaper with like a circulation of like 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small paper.
Yeah.
This kid was allowed himself to be publicly out on ABC, and so that's already brave. And then he's fired from McDonald's. Well, I'm hoping he gets a better job, because honestly, McDonald's is not like where I would want him to be working.
Yeah.
But so I guess what I where I want to go, kind of try to get back on focus here.
Yeah.
Would be to ask, my original question was, are you able to be out at work? And if so, are there any difficulties that you encounter? So I kind of want to morph that also with, what are your thoughts on this story about this kid who is being genuine to himself and then he gets punished for it?
Well, I'll start off with the kid. I'm not surprised that happened. You know, we have a long ways to go as a society to accept people for being different and being true to who they are. Just people just can't wrap their heads around things yet. And honestly, somebody will offer him a better job and it'll all work out. It is unfortunate, though. You know, he was brave enough to go on TV and or however he came out, but it's kind of I don't want to say a lesson because it's so hard, but he's going to be facing that as time goes on, and maybe it'll help him become stronger for those moments, and maybe it'll help him help somebody else in the future because of it. And as far as my job, I had to come out in my interview because I was asked why I didn't sign up for selective service. And I had told them it's because when I was supposed to, I was a woman. And they were like, oh, But I think it kind of gave me a momentum for some reason to be hired. My boss at the time, she really liked me and she really enjoyed the interview and stuff like that. So I wanted it to stay with just the bosses. And I found out a couple of days later during the hiring process that supervisors were telling a couple people that they were hiring a trans person. And one of those people was one of my good friends who actually got me the job. And I told her, she told me, and I told her to tell them to stop immediately because I will not work there if I have to walk into a room full of people staring at me and already be put on that display. And she had talked to them. And the only problems I have had since then is somebody made a comment about what bathroom I was going to use. And this was 2.5, 3 years ago. And they addressed it immediately, told me what had happened in private, asked me if they addressed it correctly. And I said, yeah. And then they laughed with me and said, well, you don't even use the bathroom here, do you? I'm like, no, I avoid all of that. So I don't know who knows and who doesn't know. It's not anything we talk about. I kind of keep to myself. That's how I am at work, period. So I like that nobody talks to me about it. And I fear the day that somebody walks up to me and says, hey, blah, 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 blah. Because, oh my God, no, I'm not prepared for that.
Yeah, and that's so hard too, because we're already vulnerable people. And employment is really sacred to us because mm-hmm. we need that money to live.
Yeah.
Just like mm-hmm. any other person, we also need that money so that we can transition because mm-hmm. insurance largely does not cover it.
Yeah.
Cover any of those costs. Well, my hormones are covered, thankfully.
Thankfully.
But surgery is not. So, yeah, that's really, you know, being able to feel safe at work is so important. And I hear these stories all the time about in North Dakota and not in North Dakota, but a lot of it's in North Dakota because there are no protections for us in terms of employment or housing in North Dakota. I hear stories all the time about employers fumbling complaints or questions or what have you about trans people. And I know in my own experience, not in North Dakota. I've never had any discrimination by employers in North Dakota, but in Alabama, I had a client one time who asked my supervisor, what's going on with the he/she working for you? So I got that, and she told me, and she said that what her response was that we love this person, they're a valuable member of our team, and you know the way that they live their life is their business. And I thought that was a good way to handle it. Then that employer unfortunately died of cancer, and the person who took over told me that I had to dress like a man. And so I left. Mm. I just left that job and I was like, it's not worth it. And I worked at another place and I was up front with them in the interview. I actually had two jobs at this point and I was up front with both of my employers because my name had not been legally changed at this point. But I said, even though my name is legally this, I won't be going by it. I'm going to be going by Darcy. This is how I'm going to be living, how I'm going to be presenting. One employer was at Auburn University actually. And they were like, okay, cool. We support you. Just let us know what we can do in the process to help make this a more comfortable place to work. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, like, great. That's perfect. And Alabama does not have protections either. So it wasn't mm-hmm. like they were legally obligated to say it. Mm-hmm. Other employer was like, well, I'm going to have to think about how our clients are going to approach you, but I think you shouldn't wear a dress. So then I was limited into what I could wear. And I would literally wear a dress to one job and I would change into pants in the car on the way to the other. Mm. And you know, I did that for like 6 months and I finally was just like, I can't anymore. Mm-mm. And it's been so great since moving here to North Dakota. NDSU, where I work, has a policy specifically preventing discrimination. So I've mm-hmm. had no problems there. Jay, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Is there anything you want to say?
Yeah, thank you for asking me.
As we close out? Or
I know.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
Well, thanks for coming on the show tonight, Jay. We appreciate your willingness to be visible for the trans community, and we look forward to many more conversations.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good evening. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You too. Bye.
For more information about the Fargo-Moorhead Brotherhood, go to facebook.com and search for FTM, Fargo/Moorhead Brotherhood. If you like their public page, then you can request access to their closed support group. On our next show, we'll be hearing from you as you share your coming out stories. If you'd like to be included in this show, please send us a quick email at radio@darcycorbett.org. Tune in next week at 5 p.m. on Wednesday here on KPPPLP 88.1 FM for Coming Out Stories.
Finding Me is a project of KPPPLP 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead.
KPPPLP is adding local color to your airwaves. We're broadcasting on Shoutcast, and you can find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM here in the Fargo-Moorhead region. you can contact us at 701-566-0917, at @media_PPP, email cindy@kpppfm.com, or duke@kpppfm.com. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, The People's Press Project, and Mexican.
Donations to Fargo-Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com. As we close out, here is a song written and performed by Billy Tipton, a jazz artist from the 1950s who lived his life as a man, and it was only discovered that he was assigned male at birth when autopsy was performed after his sudden death. We honor him tonight with his recording of the song September in the Rain. Thanks for tuning in. See you next Wednesday at 5 here on Finding Me.